to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, we're going to have our last session with our leaders, and I'd like to take this opportunity on behalf of Don and Daniel and John's not here, and everybody, and Steve, everybody on the committee, to thank you for coming. I hope you come back next year. Once again, thanks for filling out the surveys. Hope you had a great time, and I'll introduce once again Rex.
Is the basket to go around one more time for the
cafeteria? No, we already gave
you. Oh, you did? Okay. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Rex, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
I'm Rex.
You ready? Okay. I'm going to go over step 12, and this is chapter 7 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's on page 89. Working with others. Practical experience shows that nothing so much ensures immunity from compulsive overeating as intensive work with other compulsive overeaters. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from compulsive overeating as intensive work with other compulsive overeaters. It works when other activities fail. I have to say that I'm sponsoring currently four people actively, maybe seven people total that call me. Some other people call me once in a while when they want to ask for a tip or advice or something. But I'm currently taking four people through the steps. Two men and two women. And well, those are the active ones, and I think a couple of guys and another woman that calls me sporadically. The rooms of alcohol, the rooms of compulsive, rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, there's people dying in our rooms with a disease. There's people sitting next to me in a meeting that are dying, that are not getting the message. So there's people dying in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. They come to meetings, and we're not transpiring the program to them. My experience shows that for me, the best work that I do throughout the whole week is working with another compulsive overeater. That's the best thing I do all week long. I could be having the worst day in my life, be totally in my head, saying I got to go up to Starbucks at 12 o'clock to meet with so-and-so to go over step 3. I mean, how do I get myself into situations that I have to go meet with another compulsive overeater and go over step 3 with him? You know, I have so much to do, I can't believe that I'm taking my time out to go sit with another compulsive overeater and go over step 3. So I get there and we read over step 3. And then I'm like, man, thank God. I think I needed this more than he did. You know? All of a sudden, it shifts. Like, that was the best thing I did all day. I was stuck in my head all day long. You know, it says in the book, you know, in step 11, upon awakening. And upon awakening, it's best done in the morning. But at any time of the day, you can pull your head out of your ass. At any time of the day, and you can wake up. It could be at noon, you can pull your head out of your ass. and say welcome to a meeting, or welcome to the Overeaters Anonymous, to a newcomer. So I can be in my shit all day long and then all of a sudden get out of myself and help somebody else. And that's what this program is about. It's about having had a spiritual awakening as a result of working these steps, we try to help other compulsive overeaters. And through that, when I'm working with another compulsive overeater and I'm working these 12 steps, all my other issues in the life get solved. They do. And miraculously, I don't know, I don't have to compulsively overeat. I don't have to worry. Again, I like what Jim said, I don't have to worry about my problems. All I have to do is the footwork. Sometimes things don't turn out my way. So for me, I have to say so many times that the best thing I do, again, is working with another compulsive overeater. I'm going to continue reading. This is our 12-step suggestion. Carry this message to other compulsive overeaters. You can help when no one else can. No one else can help a compulsive overeater except for a compulsive overeater. So you can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember that they're very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. This is an experience you must not miss. This is an experience you must not miss. Working with other compulsive overeaters. We know you will not want to miss this. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. It is for me. Because when I'm working in the program and I'm working with others, I don't know. It's a spiritual program. It works for me. So it's a proven fact for me. I wanted to share that. Yesterday I was sharing that. You know, I really get angry when newcomers come to a meeting. And, after the meeting, they say the serenity prayer and everybody goes to the little group and that person's just standing there. You know, I believe it's our responsibility as a member of Overeaters Anonymous to go up to that person and talk to him. I deeply, deeply believe that. Even if you're in step one. Because you can go up to that person and say, hi, welcome. Have a seat. Or here's a meeting list. Or, if you're on step two, you can sponsor somebody on step one. I've heard that you shouldn't sponsor somebody, a step that you haven't taken, but I believe you have something to offer. You can be a temporary sponsor to somebody. Sometimes I talk to newcomers and they've been around for 2 or 3 weeks and, we start talking, all of a sudden they say, well, I can't find a sponsor. Or I called this person and he said it was full. And I don't know if this is the right thing, but a lot of times I'll go up to them and say, well, I can be your temporary sponsor if you want me to. And they usually say yes. They do. I don't know how that works. And then all of a sudden I'm going like, oh man, what did I do again? I committed to another person, And usually I got to say that most of the people that ask me to be their sponsors, for me to be their sponsor, don't call. They say if you want to lose a friend, ask them to be your sponsor. No. and a lot of times when I offer that, sometimes there's women, they go, I can't connect. And I duly highly suggest that men work with men and women work with women. But a lot of times, when my motives are right and when I'm doing, transpiring what I've learned in the program to another compulsive overeater, it doesn't matter to me if it's female or male. If a woman comes up to me and say, can I Can you be my sponsor? I usually say, I don't think it's a good idea. I can be your temporary sponsor, but I will be, because I don't turn anybody down. There was one time I think I was sponsoring 10, 11 people, and I don't think that works too good for me, because I didn't have too much time for myself. So currently I sponsor 3 to 4 people. We meet on a weekly basis. We go through steps, or we keep going on the step, and we read together on the step. And boy, I'm constantly in the steps, you know. So sometimes women stick with me. There's women that have done their fifth step. And sometimes I get resentful at my sponsees. You know, I had this one, a young kid, you know, probably in his early 30s or whatever. You know, he was really enthusiastic about working the program. Called me all the time and asked, and he was bugging me. I love that. I love that enthusiasm. He was bugging me, hey, Rex, when can we get together? And I was like, how about we meet outside after the meeting for 20 minutes? So we sit on the curb and read a step, you know? And, you know, I got really resentful. I mean, you know, his life's straightened out. He lost a lot of weight. He got a job back in the school district. He got a girlfriend. He got an apartment by the beach. And I'm like, fuck. What the hell? What the hell? He's doing, maybe I should do what I'm telling him to do. But I... This is a true story, and he's doing well, and he calls me once in a while, and he's taking other people through the steps, you know, and you know, that's a miracle to see somebody grow, you know. It's amazing sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I didn't do too much highlighting on this chapter. Actually, I didn't do any at all. But so I don't know where the... I do know that they say, or it said somewhere in here, that, you know, when we sit down with somebody and tell them our story, we can gain their confidence within a few minutes of telling our story, telling them that I wrecked my car when I was eating, that, you know, I constantly had skid marks in my underwear because I was so overweight. Couldn't have the proper hygiene, and ate so much food that just my stomach was just blowing up all the time. You know, there's packages on food that I never read. Somebody pointed out to me that says it can cause anal leakage on the package. It shows that on there. I go, well, I used to like those. You know, that explains why I had skid marks in my underwear all the time. So today I don't have skid marks, but anyway. Let's see. What else can I share on the 12 step? You know, I really emphasize that, you know, if we don't transmit this program to newcomers when they come in, I mean, the fellowship is going to die. If our job is to recover, so that when the newcomer comes in and I stand up and I say I have 4 years of sobriety, 4 years of abstinence, and I'm maintaining 120-pound weight loss, that newcomer is going to walk in and say, oh my God, that guy is either lying or I want what he has. Because I came in for the weight loss, or I came in for the vanity. You know, but then I realized once I lost 120 pounds, what do I do now? I better start working these steps. You know, because I came in for the diet and calories club and, you know, graduated a few times. You know, and gain my weight back, and had to take seriously working the steps and working with other people, and it's this program is a gift. You know, I have a lot of friends in this program. I have a lot of girlfriends in this program, platonic girlfriends that at any time I can go to a movie, out to dinner, whatever, and that's a gift of this program. I wanted to share too that. I'm really grateful, and it's been a great honor and a privilege for you guys to have asked me to speak here. So I really appreciate that. I was nervous. I talked to Jim a couple times on the phone, and he goes, well, you know, I'm not going to prep or I don't know what he said. He said, I'm not going to worry. I'm going to let God show me what to do or something to that extent. I go, cool, I'm not going to do the same. You know, and then I go, what am I going to do? Well, I do the same thing I do when I go with when I meet up with sponsees. I do the same thing. I show them the steps. If they ask me about a food plan, if they ask my, you know, this or that. I'll give them my experience, strength, and hope on my foods, but I tell them that's something you should work out by yourself. You know, Overeaters Anonymous gave me a life. I was dead spiritually, physically, and emotionally. And today I have growth in all three of those areas. Well, in the physical, maybe shrinkage. But so growth in the spiritual and emotional healing. So, again, I want to go back to the triangle. Unity, service, recovery. Unity is the body, service is the spirit, recovery is the mind. So, in the unity, it's found in the fellowship. Do you have a home group? Do you go to home groups? Do you have a meeting you go to regularly? Service. Found in carrying the message. With other compulsive overeaters. Are you taking other compulsive overeaters through the steps? That's service. Recovery. Recovery of the mind. Do you continue to actively work the 12 steps? If you work the steps 1 through 12, are you currently working steps 10, 11, and 12 in your daily life? Are you working with others? And when you're doing all this again, when you're doing unity, service, and recovery, you're here right in the middle. If you lose one of these legs of the triangle, the three-legged stool is going to fall. So you're here in the middle, safe and protected. You're made whole because you're doing unity, service, and recovery. Body, mind, spirit. I like to be here, somewhere in this triangle. You know, because if I'm not doing any one of these areas, I'm deficient, and it's something I can improve on. You know? And, yep. This morning in meditation, I was thinking about an ex-girlfriend that I have to make an amends to. That's what's chattering in my head. I have to go make an amends. An amends I don't want to do. Because I have to humble myself. And I have to take away my pride and lay down my ego, which is really hard for me to do. But I have to make that amends because it's spending a lot of time in my head. You know? And that's all I got. Thanks.
I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm Jim, and I've had a great time here with you guys, and got to meet a lot of new friends, and I learned a lot, and it's just been a great experience. I got to spend time with my sponsor, who I don't get to do that very often. Although we're in contact a lot, we don't get together physically very often. So this was a pleasure getting to spend time with you. I want to say this is going to be a rather short share, I hope. But I wanted to say something about sponsorship again. You know, I think when Rex was sharing about the importance of being of service, the highest form of service there is being a sponsor, I think. And Spencer and I have had a long, long relationship. And we have a little different relationship. We cross-sponsor each other. In other words, he's my sponsor, and I'm his sponsor. So when we're on the phone together, if he's asking me a question as his sponsor, I have the phone over here. And then it's reversed, so I put the phone on the other ear, and then we switch roles. And so that works pretty good. And as I say, we've had a long relationship, and we both are abstinent and got a good life. And so I love you, and I'm happier in my life. And I wanted to share a little bit on just two subjects briefly. And first one is acceptance, and it was brought up here a few times. And when I was new, I said, where do you get that? Where does it come from? What is it? All kinds of questions about acceptance, because I heard a lot of it from my first sponsor. He was a big advocate of acceptance. And certainly Dr. Paul didn't invent acceptance, but he certainly defined it for people in recovery for all time in the big book. But I've learned this, I think, in the Serenity Prayer. You know, we're praying for serenity, acceptance, courage, and wisdom. Those are the four things we're looking at in the or praying for in the Serenity Prayer. So acceptance is a big part of that Serenity Prayer for me. What is it? Well, I guess I've come to believe that acceptance is a spiritual condition. It's not giving up or approving of anything or caving in or acquiescing or anything of the sort. It's a spiritual condition, a change in attitude where I'm facing life squarely on life's terms and moving forward. And so that's how I envision acceptance, a spiritual condition. Where does it come from? For me, it came out of the third step. You know, I'm turning my life and my will over the care of my higher power, and now I accept things the way they are because I have now made that contract with my higher power. And so things are right now exactly the way they're supposed to be, and things are going to turn out just the way they should, and I don't have to worry about them. That's not my job. And so I accept the outcome. I accept the I don't have to get into the results business. You know, that's none of my business. And so that's where I bring acceptance into my program. So anyway, the other thing I want to share about is my personal experience coming into OA. And this is just my experience and my belief and what I've been taught. And I don't expect anybody to agree with it or endorse it or whatever. If you don't like it, don't tell me, but you can pray for me or whatever. But I having a doctor as a first sponsor, a medical doctor, I was drilled into me that this is a disease. This is not a psychological or a psychiatric disorder that I'm dealing with here. This is a disease, and it's a medical problem. And having accepted that idea from him, I understand that this disease is a chemical reaction in my brain, and no amount of weight loss or food plan is ever going to change that fact. That is there. And so I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm always going to be a compulsive overeater. I am not a food addict, and I don't have an eating disorder. And I'll tell you why. I don't have an eating disorder. What I have is a stopping disorder. And so those are two totally different things for me. An eating disorder is a psychological or a psychiatric problem. If I have that, if I have an eating disorder, I don't need you guys anymore. I'll go to a psychiatrist and get fixed, or a therapist, and I'll get the problem resolved. And so we all know that doesn't work for people like us. In fact, they come here to get fixed. And so that's why I believe that so stringently. I can blame this on a lot of traumatic things that happened in my life, but it just isn't, that isn't true. Everybody has traumatic things that happen in their life. They don't end up doing what we do. And so I believe more than ever today that I'm suffering from a disease, a medical problem. And so food addiction, that was that notion that I was addicted to food almost killed me. And I'll tell you why. I came out of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I knew, or I thought I knew, that, you know, all you have to do is stop drinking there. Well, that first place, that's not true, but that's what I thought. And I thought, well, OA couldn't possibly work for a person like me because I can't stop eating. The long-range consequences of that are not good. And so I thought, it will not work because I can't stop eating. I did not understand the difference between eating and compulsive overeating. And those are two separate, distinct things. So I am not addicted to food. I don't believe it. I don't know if there's any evidence for it, but it doesn't make any difference. I am not a food addict. What I am addicted to is the act of compulsive overeating, and that's a chemical reaction that takes place in my brain. So that's how I embrace the disease concept of compulsive overeating. So and the other thing is, I guess when I was new too, I don't know who I was talking to this about. They used to tell the story about taking the tiger out of the cage three times a day. And I didn't like that because I didn't want to live like that. I didn't want to be under that threat of that three times a day. It didn't make any sense to me. It didn't seem like recovery to me. And the other notion was that somehow OA had figured out to indulge in a substance to which we were addicted, and nothing happened. And that made no sense to me at all. And so finally, I dispelled this idea of food addiction completely. I just don't buy it. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm not a food addict, and I don't have an eating disorder. And so the solution for what's wrong with me, and getting back to this disease concept that was explained to me by my sponsor, was that there is no medical solution for this disease. And there's a lot of diseases there is no medical solution for. And so what he said and what he gave me was a spiritual solution to that medical problem, a spiritual solution to a medical problem. And not many people buy that idea, especially when you're new, because it doesn't make much sense. You know, I got a medical problem, I'll go to a doctor. It's senseless because they don't have it. They can't help people like us. And so the spiritual solution is what I found here in Overeaters Anonymous. And so I found that through the 12 steps. And so that was what was wrong with me. I'm a compulsive, suffering from a disease of compulsive overeating. Now the solution, again, as I say, is the spiritual solution of the 12 steps. That's what I found here in OA. So it brings me to a definition. What is the definition of abstinence? OA has wrestled with that since they started. The definition has changed from this to that. Well, it's losing normal body weight, refraining from compulsive overeating. Neither one of those things have much to do with abstinence. That's the definition of a diet. Refraining from compulsive overeating, returning to a normal body weight. You can hear that from Jenny Craig. That doesn't have much to do with the solution or the definition of this disease. So I had to... I finally had to encompass from a sponsor and these steps from this program, what was a definition of abstinence? Well, a food plan, very important, a spiritual tool. But adhering to a food plan and losing weight does not equal abstinence. That just doesn't work. I've tried it. I can lose weight without you guys, but I can't stay that way, and I can't stay abstinent without OA. So that didn't seem to make much sense. Adhering to a food plan and losing weight had no effect on the disease of compulsive overeating whatsoever. No effect at all. And why is that? Because neither one of them are the cause. The cause is that chemical reaction in my brain, which I address here by the 12 steps. So, the food plan, very important tool. Food plan, spiritual tool to get abstinent. Okay? Weight loss, if you have that symptom, happens as a result of being abstinent. So I was jumping over the very problem. I was concentrating on the symptoms rather than the problem. And I just couldn't get anywhere. I thought, I got this food plan. I'm on this food plan. I'm all over it. I'm losing weight and I'm abstinent. And that wasn't true at all. I had to find abstinence through the steps, through the program, through fellowship, through being of service, as Rex was sharing about, and then abstinence came. And so what is abstinence? What is my definition of abstinence? That's the message I want to carry to you right now. It's a spiritual condition. Abstinence is a spiritual condition, the God-given power to stop compulsively overeating. Period. There's no more explanation for it that I can find. I don't have any explanation other than that as to why I have been abstinent for 14 years and I literally almost ate myself to death. I have no other explanation. Maybe you do. I don't know. But that's the only thing I can figure out. So when I embrace that idea of it being, a spiritual condition, how do I maintain that spiritual condition? Well, Rex went through it very well. Service, always service, accelerates my recovery here. Being a sponsor, having commitments, going to meetings, coming here. I'm doing a 12 step. Rex and I we're doing our 12 step, right? We're carrying you the message. You don't have to take it, but we're going to bring it to you. So that's part of my 12 step here that I'm doing right now. And so what's the end game here? What is the end game? There had to be an end game here for me. I got to have a definition and a clarity to everything. So why am I getting well and recovering in OA? Well, there's only one reason I can see, and that is to be of service to another compulsive overeater. I'm getting well, not for me, I like it. I'm glad to be in recovery. I'm glad to be abstinent. Glad to have this fellowship. But my mission to keep this is to share it. That's all there is to it. If I don't, abstinence will wither. It'll wither and die if you're not sharing it, if you're not carrying it on. And I've seen that happen. A lot of people, old timers around here have too, come in here, get the program, lose a few pounds. Life gets good, like Rex was sharing. Ooh, I got a new apartment, new girlfriend, new car. I guess I don't need you guys anymore. I'll see you around. And it dies. It will not maintain itself without carrying the message to another compulsive overeater. I think Bill Wilson said our primary purpose, and the chief reason for our existence here is to carry the message of Overeaters Anonymous to the next guy that comes in the door. And I love you all. I love this program. I just can't express to you enough my gratitude for you having me here and being able to share this with you. And I've learned so much here from you guys, Sharon, and I certainly want to hear more. And so I'm going to stop right there. And it's Overeaters Anonymous, overhauled attitudes and love and service. And that's all there is to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim and Rex, for a great retreat. Now's the time we generally go around and give you guys all a chance to share maybe a good topic is what you got out of the retreat. So who'd like to start? This gentleman here in the front row.
Yeah, I've spent enough time in my life in the cheap seats, so I want a good seat this time.
What's your name, young fella?
I'm Spencer, and I'm a grateful compulsive overeater. Hi, guys. And, boy, I'm so glad I could sneak off from responsibilities and get to spend a little time here with you guys. And thank you so much, Rex. That was a wonderful share. I enjoyed it Friday night, and I get some more. Geez, that's my sponsor talking like that's, you were incredible. I just thought, wow, that's my sponsor. Hey, good stuff. I don't know quite what he said, but I like it. I want to keep it short and sweet. I'm maintaining about an 80-pound weight loss. I came in here my top weight was over 300, but I got in here about 280. I'm now about 225. And, gee, Mike, those clipping your nails is annoying. Anyway, what I want to share about is compulsive overeating is... has been my primary disease ever since I was five. In fact, tomorrow I'm picking up a client at the UC Medical Center, you know, in Mexico. I mean, not Mexico, but it's in Soto Street and what have you, and it's that type of area. Hey, Nikki, if you want to ride to the train station, you better get rid of that fucking clipper. Anyway, I'm going to go pick up a client. I have a transportation service, and I remember when I was five getting shuttled over there by my parents. I ate when they had 60 years ago a big Cadbury sized thing of X-Lax. I ate the whole thing. You know, the silver paper was around the kitchen, and my mother figured it out pretty quick what I did. And so I just thought, look at the circle. I'm in service today with a small little mom and pop service, but I'm in service, able to give help to some unknown person, and that's where I started, 62 years ago. It's too funny. Well, anyway, I'm going to go there without, I'm going to go there and be on time, of course, and provide the best and safe service possible. But I wouldn't have been able to do that without finally coming into Overeaters Anonymous. 78, so I'm thinking it's 35 years ago or whatever, 34 years ago. And I've never left, and I'm so glad to have stayed. I'll share one more thing and I'll sit down. You'll read in our books, particularly in our OA books, but in our big book, about how depression is a part of what some of us experience, and that in getting an abstinence, depression will leave us, or some such words to that effect. I've been dealing with that issue, and I don't consider it a side issue an outside issue. I consider it a part of living, certainly, that I've had to experience. And as Jim was sharing, it is a disease that I have. I don't know quite how it all is, but it's a chemical disease. And I can no more do anything about it. I'm powerless in front of it, just as I was the food. And what I want to share with you is, I share this also with Roseanne, our co-founder, who's suffering from it, this disease right now. I don't know that she's able to get to a meeting physically. And I don't know if John, is John still here? He took off, but he's very close to Roseanne. And I think physically she may be impaired, but certainly with depression. And God bless her. I'm so grateful that she put this thing together. I've been free of depression now for a month. I haven't had a month from depression. I haven't been away from depression a month in many years. I am just very happy about that. I'm able to say it. Jim's listened to me ad infinitum as I go and travel my path these last however many years. And so I'm here to tell you that, my friend before the meeting, Adam, asked me, well, what's the secret? And it's kind of funny because you hear it around the rooms, but it certainly is for me. What's working for me now is prayer and medication. And that's just how it is. Our literature talks about good outside doctors, and medication is certainly a part of recovery in OA and, of course, in AA. The literature is just wonderful. So I bring that up only because it is a side issue. Our primary purpose is, of course, the compulsive overeating and being relieved of that. And our literature also said this was but a symptom of a deeper-seated problem. And, of course, character defects, sure, I deal with character defects. And I also deal with a disease that I have. That's really all I wanted to share. And thank you for listening, and thank you for being here. I love you all. Don't worry, I know it's going to be tough to follow.
Well, if it's too tough to follow, I'll just hire your transportation service to take me out of here. So.
I'm Dave. I'm a compulsive overeater, alcoholic, and I've had my second really truly superb retreat, and I have a lot of thanks to all of you that I've talked to and your shares. And I am struggling with a spiritual illness, and a food plan will have to become part of my solution, one tool. And I'm working out right now maybe a way that I can do that with committing food and not having to go to restaurants to eat, because if I commit the food the right way, I'm even thinking of paying someone to fix my lunch so that I get to spend money, but the lunch is abstinent, you know. I don't know if that'll work. I have to work it out, I guess. But a lot of the guys in the San Diego group, I've been coming to meetings now for a couple years, appreciate the fact that you were able to get me here, help me get a ride and all that. I did one thing this weekend, a little outside of the program, but part of it. I met a person, a woman that I've known for 35 years during our break, and I made amends. And the amends I made were that when I had met her, and I was, of course, 60 pounds overweight when I had met her, we got to be friends. We actually played handball together a little bit, and that kind of got me on an exercise kick. But I developed this crush on her. And she had made it clear to me then that she would be my friend, but she wasn't really interested in a relationship. And, you know, I couldn't accept it. And it's interesting. Over the years, I remember lots of things that, you know, I would say I was very offensive to her, probably even stalked her on some level, you know. But she, when we met, and I tried to make these amends, she said, well, I don't remember anything, you know. So I wasn't really upfront about, well, you know, I did A, B, C, and D to you because, you know, but I did say if there was anything that I had done to you that, you know, you felt was inappropriate, that, you know, I'm sorry. And it turned out after we talked that, and I knew some members of her family, and, you know, they've gotten into programs. And, but the point is that, you know, I'm working a night step now in my other program, and I'm learning to not be afraid to make amends. And, you know, I'm going to have to learn in this program not to be afraid to make amends because, you know, part of the issues I've had involved, you know, people whose hospitality I accepted, you know, that I stayed in their homes, ate their food, overate with them, you know, didn't pay for anything. And that's an amends that I have to make, which I think is involved with my alcoholism. I think it's really also involved with my overeating. So, anyway, thank you for letting me share.
I'm Darren. I'm a compulsive eater and a binge eater. I'm in relapse, and I had about 2 years of pretty good abstinence. I lost 80 pounds or so, and I've gained it most of it back in the last 3 months or so. And one of the things I've gotten out of this retreat was there was a, I can't remember if it was Rex or Jim, but they showed that if you go, so if it's a spiritual, physical, emotional, and spiritual program, the way of abstinence is going from physical to emotional to spiritual. And the path to relapse is spiritual, emotional, and physical. And that's what I found, is that the food was the last thing to go in my relapse. It was only a few weeks ago where I was really, you know, binging my brains out on sugar and drinking melted ice cream and that sort of thing. But the relapse really started a long time ago when I was just unable to place all of my faith in the spiritual part of this program, and it slowly unraveled to the point where I started overeating, and the physical side of it really caught up with me. So I'm very grateful to know that if I start with the physical, I can get back to the spiritual, and I'm really grateful for that. So thank you.
I'm Dan, compulsive overeater. and this is my first retreat, and I want to thank you all for being here and being a part of my recovery. I took away a lot. I've made lots of notes that I'm going to refer to. And it was particularly nice to see my friend Don, who we're friends from New York, from going back 26 years. So it was great to see him here. You know, I went through a lot of things here. I actually copped a resentment about somebody, and I had to get calmed down. But it was nice to know there are people here that I can turn to, people in program. These are the kinds of people that I can turn to and seek advice and help. And I was not disappointed. And I think, for me, program, a lot of it is that fellowship, knowing that there's other people that I can talk to, if I have the willingness to do so. And I have to confess, sometimes I don't. But it's been great to meet all of you guys, and I hope to come back next year. Thanks very much.
Hi, my name's Paul. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hello.
This is my first retreat here, and thank you so much for organizing it. It's a lot of work, you know, and I'm really glad to have been able to come down here and come down here with my sponsor who recommended it in the first place. You know, so many things were said here. You know, I went to school a long time ago at the Culinary Institute of America, which is like a two-year program. And I remember one of my favorite chefs saying to me at the end of it, he said, "You don't know how much you've learned until a year or two after you've been out in the kitchens, because it'll start sinking in." And coming to a retreat like this is kind of the same thing. There's been a lot of things said. There's been a lot shared. And I think it's going to take a while to kind of integrate it, you know. And that's a really good thing. And I think that that's a really positive thing about a retreat, and also a men's retreat, because it's different when you go into the rooms and it's a mixed crowd, you know. And a lot of times it is more women than is men, you know. And our issues are different in certain ways, and we can't speak up about certain things or feel comfortable about speaking up with certain things in meetings. And this is a wonderful place to be able to express that. Those feelings and where they're appropriate and understood. And Jim, thank you so much. There's something that you said that's going to stay with me. And you know, your the way that you expressed how you live with your higher power on a day-to-day basis and invite him to your table and invite him into your life and invite him into your program and invite him into your spiritual connection really resonated with me heavily, you know. I think, you know, I've been grateful to my higher power, to God. I think that I've prayed to God. I've invited him into some things into my life. But I don't sit down with him at a meal. I still feel, you know, that I have control over the speed of which I eat, you know. And I think that, you know, I tried and this morning to invite him in before I began to eat, and I felt myself slow down, and I felt the emotional connection there. And I think that was one of the greatest gifts that I got out of this retreat. So thank you very much, Jim, for that. I really appreciate it.
I'm Steve. I'm a compulsive overeater. Thanks to the leaders. You guys were great. Some of the things you said definitely will stick with me. And to Dave and Don and other guys that have helped put this all together and spread the word and get a lot of the new folks here, I really appreciate it. You know, I shared on Friday and definitely needed to. Thanks to the folks who organize it so we get a chance to do that, because I've noticed of all things with the retreats that if I don't share on Friday, I regardless of how much time I spend in this room versus out in the grounds or with people I know or people I don't know, I tend to be much more disconnected and in my head and feeling separate then. And so when I share on Friday about being connected, it really, you know, really helped me. Really love the small groups. You know, it's like we come up here and
And we get here on Friday night and just think like, oh, we got this whole weekend and there's all these guys I want to get to know and all these old folks that I, you know, people that I know that all these years that I haven't seen for a year and want to catch up with them. And then, you know, you blink and it's Sunday morning and we're, you know, packing up to go. So I thought I was going to leave early today and it turned out not to. And I'm kind of glad it didn't. I'm glad to have this time, like bonus time with you guys. So thanks and keep coming back.
I'm Don, compulsive overeater. I want to give you a quote from Julia Child, and it has to do with binging. She says, life itself is the proper binge. And when I'm in fit spiritual condition, I can binge on life and really, really be alive and love what I'm doing and be present for things. I have a sponsor who says, life is juicy. Get every drop of it. And one of the things that happens to me when I come to these retreats is that and I realize that I have a fit spiritual condition that I have to work to maintain. And that's what you guys were talking about. You were talking about maintaining my fit spiritual condition by working with others, by really persistently doing some part of the program at all times. I love the idea of scheduling for the week what I'm going to do for the week. And then, you know, making sure that I make some reach out calls and making sure I call my sponsor and making sure I work with a newcomer and all that thing. And I love the idea of if I do the footwork, that's the important part. And then let God worry about the results. That really is so helpful. And the connection that I've made with all of you is so wonderful. Now, the one thing that is my own particular thing that probably some of you can only understand in the same way I understand the concept of pregnancy. But that is this. As a gay man my age, who was so much of an outsider with other men, if they kind of understood who I was, because there was always such homophobia in the world, to be accepted and to just kind of feel part of, as I do in this group, you know, this may not apply to younger gay guys because things are quite different now. But as a gay man my age, to feel so kind of at ease with a bunch of straight guys is a wonderful thing. And I don't have to pretend about I read the baseball scores so that I can spout them to anybody. And I don't have to say, okay, I'll play baseball or I'll do something that I don't want to do. And you also know if you need an interior decorating job done, you come to me. That's it. I am who I am. You got what you see is what you get. And it's so nice to be able to be that now. And that's something that for years and years and years, masquerading as a corporate executive, trying to pretend, you know, my late partner and I had a couple of lesbian girlfriends that we would go and, you know, we would have these window decoration couples and we were the same for them. And I don't have to do that anymore. And especially in this group, I don't have to do that anymore. And it's so wonderful. And this is a great contributor to my fit spiritual condition. But it takes maintenance. It doesn't stay alive in the same way a garden doesn't stay alive unless you put some water on it. Anyway, thanks for letting me share.
I'm Michael. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I love that phrase, don't leave before the miracle happens. And you know, for me, this last session has been really important. I think a real peace came together for me. Jim, you're talking about this as a chemical imbalance, and then followed up by Spencer talking about depression, and that's been something that I've struggled with for many, many years, and have really gone a long way in other parts of my spiritual life in helping heal that depression, but I've always said to myself, this overeating is not a disease. You guys have a disease. Someone who's obese has a disease. I don't have a disease. And something kind of clicked for me just now, which is because the reason I overeat is because I don't want to feel those really, really painful feelings that are anyone who has been severely depressed knows. And I think I've been kidding myself in some way. This is a vestige of that. And, you know, since I plan to go forward and become a therapist and help people who have severe depression, I'm not going to be able to do my job right unless I get abstinent, because it's another symptom of the depression. And it is a chemical imbalance. And it is, you know, one of the reasons why I've seen depression so rampant among people with OA. It is part of the chemical imbalance. So thank you, both of you, for helping make that happen for me.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Adam. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Adam.
And I want to thank the leaders. I love your passion, Rex, about the 12th step. That just knocked me out. And I finally heard a definition of abstinence. I have been trying to, I can't tell you how many hours and hours and hours of conversation I've had with people trying to figure out something that sounded right. So thanks. That was awesome. I came up here, I've been in relapse over and over. I haven't been to a meeting for a really long time, and when Don sent me that email about you want to, because I'm on that list, so I always get the email every year, you want to come to the retreat, something, thank God, God just kind of took a hold of my hands, and I typed back, hell yes, and signed up immediately, because I knew if I waited any more, I wouldn't do it. And what I've gotten out of the retreat is that and it's something that I've been focusing on, it's been really reaffirming this, is that I am not my disease. And, in fact, I don't even want to call it my disease. Sometimes I look at the disease as a foreign entity. And I like that idea that, you know, that it is a brain glitch, or, you know, that there is disease happening in me. And when I'm in the disease, you know, the disease uses my own brain against me and my own best reasoning against me. And so, another thing that the disease does with me is that it blurs the lines between me and God, and where I am, where I go to, where God is, goes to, and, you know, where our connection is. And I keep on trying to take more responsibility, thinking that I have to solve everything, that I'm in charge, that I have to be able to do this, I have to be able to fight this disease, I have to be able, no matter how, like somebody said, it's an achievement, it's not an achievement, it's abstinence is not an achievement, it's a, you receive it, you don't achieve it. I like that, that really works for me, because no matter how many hours and days and years I spent in these rooms, it would not get through to me. And I feel like it's just starting to get through to me that this is not my fault. This is not my doing. This is not, and that makes the, you know, what I have in front of me to do to participate in my recovery is not as odious as it's always been. It's not as impossible seeming as it's always been, because I'm not responsible for lifting the obsession. I'm not responsible for making myself abstinent. All I have to do is work these tools. And if I just stay on that, and it's true, when I actually do service, I'm fine. It's a happy time, usually. I mean, 9 out of 10 times is a happy time. But when I'm in the disease, it's the worst thing on earth I can think of. You know, the isolation is just intense. And I believe it with everything I know because I'm completely in the disease. So, it's really helped me to be here and actually relate to you guys and see old friends and Spencer. Thank you. God, Spencer's helped me more than anything. And
to
get right sized. Thanks.
So I'm Tim. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Tim.
I want to thank you all. I think for me, I've taken a lot away from this weekend. I heard a lot of different things. I think we all come from different places. Several of us, you know, a little bit further north. Several of us on airplanes. And I think one of the things that struck me from everybody's story and wherever they are in their recovery is the unity of the problem, the unity of the things we struggle with. As we got into our small groups and talked about topics, you know, we started with one topic and then the other topics would sort of start to flow in because these things were all related. And I think it's really great to hear everybody's perspective and you know, come to a retreat like this and be able to see in a very physical way, this is the disease we live with, and this is the solution that we need. And that's very powerful. I think for me in particular, it's been great. This retreat has been, very, for me, focused on the spiritual side of things, in terms of the things that we've talked about. When we talked about the emotional side of things, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, God and how that works into that. And that's something I haven't paid as much attention to in my program, as I need to. And so it's been great to hear that. And I think that, I think that most of all the fellowship, and I think it is, given that it's a men's retreat, it's a little easier, to feel fellowship. There's just a little bit less difference between us all, than there is in a mixed meeting. Maybe I'm a little more open, or a little bit less wondering how to interact with people. Though I am a straight guy who can't stand sports, you know, so. So anyways, just thanks for the fellowship and thanks for all being here.
Avery, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Avery.
And I had a request, but I'm going to speak anyway. And the request is from myself because it took me 3 months, 3 meetings a day before I even identified myself by my name. A newcomers, I never said anything. 1 month of abstinent, I never said anything. You know, just I never said anything because what I heard was the honesty in the rooms, and I knew that I couldn't be honest. And so today I get to be honest, and that's only because I've learned that from fellows like yourself and from some of you guys in the room, actually. So the only thing I know today, and thank you for your passion. That's someone said it earlier, and that's the phrase that came from Rex and Jim, is your passion, your enthusiasm for recovery. And I appreciate that because that's what attracted me. There are three types of compulsive overeaters that I know of. Those who are good in math and those who aren't. And so thank you for having me here.
I'm called Paul and I'm a compulsive overeater. Thank you so much for your definition of abstinence. I agreed with 90% of it, and then 10% of it I sat back there and argued for 20 minutes over schematics. So thank you for that. And yeah, thank you, Rex, for the job you've done. I sat in meetings for 20-some years before I heard that thing in the fifth chapter where it says some of us suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. Thank you so much for talking about depression. I like the word melancholy better. It just sounds so much cooler. If I'm going to suffer from something, I want to be cool in every area. About 20 years into this deal, it became apparent something was wrong, and I went the route for about 4 years with I'm bipolar type thing. What I came to find out of that, for me, it's a blood chemistry thing. The medical people have to have a term to describe behaviors. And what I came to find out is that for me, when I eat certain things, they cause certain things to happen, and then I'm incapable of acting any different. And what I came at the end of a 4-year journey, and it was hell for me. It was as close as I've ever come to suicide was being assisted by a doctor getting well. And I found the medicine that they prescribe was for me as dangerous and as horrible a journey as anything I've ever done. But I have to tell you that if I did not do that journey, I would have never come out the other side and found the answer that I had to find. And so I agree, we all have to walk our path. We all have to do. And if you blow your brains out, you lose the game. So you've got to do whatever you've got to do to stay alive long enough to find out what the real answer is for you. And I truly believe seek out outside medical help. If you get sick enough that this thing is overwhelming, you've got to have help sometimes just to keep your little nose above the water. What's interesting is I work in power plants, and we have a thing called boiler chemistry. And you just take regular water, shove it into a boiler, and if you just leave it alone, it changes. And what I've come to find out is I have a blood chemistry. And if I do nothing, it's going to change. If I add something to it, it's going to change. But it's a dynamic thing. And in a power plant, we constantly monitor it. What I found out for me as a human being that I have a coarse button. And when I got here, I didn't even know what range I needed to be in. I had no idea where center was. And over the years, the coarse button isn't used as much, but now I have a little fine button. And now I can tell when things are getting a little weird. And a guy used an analogy years ago. He says, a jack in the box. And I can hear the music. And once the little jack in the box, once he pops out of that box, I'm screwed. Because it takes forever to get the jack in the box back in. So now with my little fine-tuned button, I can hear the music. And what I was, one thing that a shrink gave me, he says, always have a backup plan in life for everything you do. We used to say it, don't ever go to a place that you don't take your own car. Because you don't want to be trapped places. And I've come to find out that with food, with everything else, that you need to have a backup plan. Because when stuff starts going south, there's a little guy named Felix, and some of us grew up with that little magic bag. And sometimes the first 10 items you pull out of that little sack is going to cost you your life. You need to have 112 things, and tomorrow it'll be 113 and 114. I've come to see that this is a program of limitless expansion. I hope to grow every day. Thank you so much. This has been a wonderful thing.
Gabriel, compulsive overeater. So I was thinking back there about a few weeks ago, got a real bad hankering for a key lime pie, 11:30 at night. I've had a slice of key lime pie in Key West. I wanted that kind of slice, you know, that kind of flavor, that kind of experience. 11:30 at night, weeknight. I'm on the job. I have a night job. I think, where the hell am I going to get myself a great key lime pie at this hour? Wednesday night. Long story short, I end up at Walmart. They have a Sara Lee in the frozen section key lime pie. I buy it, and it says, you know, needs to defrost 4 to 5 hours, 5 to 6 hours, whatever. And I laugh, you know, I'm eating it and in the car on the way home. So a key lime pie from Walmart is essentially, you know, lard, corn syrup, squirts of, you know, green and flavoring, right? And it's a pretty big pie, and I'm just downing it.
And by this time it's midnight, I'm, you know, online, probably surfing the net for porn and eating my key lime pie. And I think, and you know, I'm going halfway through and about three quarters through, I think, wow, I'm sick. I'm sick to my stomach. You know, you put that shit into your stomach at that hour after a full day of binging, and you just slow to listening to the next heartbeat. You know, just like total food coma. And it was kind of like the last, my most recent bottom, because I'm thinking what used to be a life of extraordinary ambition has gone to string together a number of mindless jobs where I just get by, 300 and, you know, I think 7 pounds last time I weighed. I'm moving slowly because my back at the age of 36 is going out. So much so, some days, you know, I hear the alarm ring and I literally can't move. That type of, my back went out. Calling in sick, and I'm eating my key lime pie. I don't want it anymore. I'm still eating it. I mean, just really, really rich. It's like, it was like cream cheese, you know, just swallowing bite after bite. And I think, what the fuck happened? 13 years of programming here, a belly full of this horrible key lime pie, and I'm thinking, I got to get back into it. You know, left to my own devices, that's what happens to me. Stuffing myself, midnight, I'm going to call in sick tomorrow. Hopefully I can get out of bed. You know, 305 pounds, my frame just can't keep up with this immediate weight gain again. And I'm thinking, I better go to that men's retreat, come hell or high water. And I'm really taking to heart the words of Father Frank. This is a symbol of new beginnings. You know, it's possible that we can all, or I at least, can have the vision of coming back here next year at closer to 200 pounds rather than 300. Generally happy rather than miserable, sarcastic, cynical, pessimistic, negative, hateful. That's the vision I'm taking for from here. That's my takeaway. And I'm really looking forward to a new commitment, just like the leaders described, where I'm gonna, God help me, roll out of bed, and upon awakening, begin the day with that reading, begin the day just like I've seen here, where there's folks sitting at the tables, reading the big book, writing, starting the day off with meditation, asking God, going into a food place, help me with my food port, just a real deep alignment with a higher power that will get me to recovery, you know? Because the alternative is, it's just ugly. It's fat and it's ugly and it's morbid, you know? So, thanks.
I'm Chris. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm sitting back there and like, well, what am I going to say? I want it to be so profound. I'll go through a timeline or something, you know. It's probably best to just focus on what's going on right now. A lot of acceptance. I was talking with a member after we were all finished last night. And I said, oh, before I go to bed and go to my room, I need to just call my wife because, you know, I texted her and told her it was probably going to go late and it's 2 hours later there, so it's really late. And she said she was watching something on public TV. And I thought, well, she wants me to call her and it went later than I thought, but I want to be respectful. That's more consistent with the person I want to be. So I call her and I don't say hi. I don't say I love you. I don't say, I said, I'm going to bed. And she goes, okay. just like that. You can hear it hanging out there. And I said, what's going on? Well, our nephew showed up at my mom and dad's today with his wife. And he had a tumor, and they took it out, and they wanted to tell him in person it's definitely cancer, and they don't know what they're going to do. And I didn't overeat over that. I brought all my own food, and it was locked up in this building, so I couldn't have eaten it here anyway, and I don't think the store is in town. You know what? I wouldn't put it past me. I could have found something, because I used to be, well, when I was on my way to 437 pounds, I was very creative. So I guess the point of the story is that I can care about people and wish them well and not smother them, and take what I have gotten out of this retreat and bring it home with me, but then not announce it. You know, ask them how their weekend was, that kind of thing. And if they ask about mine, I can tell them. But what did I get out of this retreat? I have met a whole bunch of people I've never met before. Some, yes, I knew before the retreat. But now I'm forever changed. Like we've heard already today, I'm always changing, and I'm not done changing. But I'll always be who I am, plus you and 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 you. I can't get by without that experience being part of me. I may not make use of it, I may not make the best use of it, but I'll always have it available to me, whereas if I had not come, I wouldn't have had that opportunity.
Thank you. Dave, compulsive overeater. Boy, this has been a great retreat for me. They're all good. I learned a long time ago not to expect a lot. And then if everything that happens is a blessing, and this one has been. And I enjoyed, I too enjoyed Rex's passion. I need that kind of passion to continue and to press on every day. And Jim, thank you for, I'm in agreement with you. When I came in the program, they didn't have all these things like ADD and all that stuff, and Ritalin and stuff like that. So, what I have inside of me is a hurt little boy that learned how to be comforted with food, you know, that was orphaned and adopted and left alone too much, and parents fought till I was 15, and then they divorced, and of course, being a normal teenager, I blamed it on me because I was fucked up, you know. And then I came in here and people said, let's review that and see if that's true. And thanks to people like you that sat with me and helped me do my, because I do my inventory by myself. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do anything by myself. I needed help with that. And I met a wonderful man named Pete Peterson in the AA program. Came to OA because he quit drinking, but he started overeating. That's strange. Nobody does that. But Pete sat down with me and helped me write my inventory. And he had me write about stuff that I hadn't planned on writing. And like I said last night, and people like him, and I call him up every year, and I don't want to lose base with him, and I thank him, you know. And I think he's celebrated 40 years of sobriety now, and he's still the same guy, you know. He's, no matter what position he's reached in life, he's picking a drunk up in his car and taking him to a meeting, you know. I learned that from him, you know, that's the most important thing, you know, and it still is. And that's the way, you know. And I wrote my letter to God, prayed in the letter, you know, I thank God for my wife's sobriety, and I those letters are amazing. And I got it in the mail from Daryl, and I opened it up, and I read that, and my wife had 2 years of sobriety now. So we all get here in different ways, and we have all different paths. That's what I've learned in 36 years, you know, and none of them's wrong, you know, and mine is neither, you know, and I haven't been perfectly abstinent for 36 years, but it's the best 36 years of my life, and I keep growing. If I keep sticking around, and I hang around with my friend Rex there, and and you know that a lot of that stuff, and all you guys, and you know, we're all in this thing together. And I, what's like to say about the 12 step? It's such an important thing. We get to these retreats, and it's the last thing we talk about is the 12 step, and we cut it off short, you know. But I'm so proud of everybody in San Diego because we really carried the message down there, and everybody agreed and voted and debated, and we rent a space 1,500 square feet to have our meetings in. And I'd like to invite you to come down and visit us. It's a wonderful place. We have really good meetings down there almost all day Saturday. And call me up. I'm a sponsor. I take phone calls, and I don't know what it'll do for you, but it'll sure help me. Thanks.
I'm Daryl, compulsive overeater. And, I think, first of all, I'm really grateful to the leaders. I think that I heard some stuff that I needed to either hear or be reminded of this weekend. And one of the highlights for me, this is my 23rd retreat here, and I write that letter every year, and I keep my letter, so... my personal tradition is to read the letters during the free period yesterday, and then I had to, because there's so many of them now, that I had to read into the night last night. But and then it was interesting when I didn't open the letter that I just received until I got to it and read it in the proper sequence. And it's real interesting because last year I suffered a stroke in March. And so the stroke was four months old when I wrote that letter. And so I was looking at my life, and I was thinking, okay, what's the deal here, God? Because I'm not able to put in the hours I was before that I can keep my office and my practice. And as some of you know Peter Smith, when I first went into private practice, Peter had me write a contract with God, giving him the practice, and my wife and I both signed it. And so then I'm thinking, so God's pulling the plug on me. I must not be doing a good job here, and I'm going to have to close it down. So, but I said, well, at least it can be an orderly process. And so I started making arrangements to get towards the end of the year. I had to make a decision by December 31st. And I like that little that part in the big book where it says, we pause when agitated or doubtful. They don't tell you sometimes a pause is 3 months long. And that's the way it was here because I didn't know what I was going to do. But finally, I was going to have to shut down the office. That was pretty obvious. And so I have these clients, and I'm going to have to, I figure that's the end of my days of practice. And I met with a colleague that is a good networker and knows a lot of therapists in the area, and I was going to tell her a little bit about each client and see if I could get some recommendations on who I might refer them to. And she says, you know, she said, we've been trying to open this office. My husband and I are trying to do a conversion for this old house to offices. We want to do counseling offices. And we've been hung up with the city for 2 years, and we just got approval last Tuesday. Why don't you come over on a part-time basis, and I'll rent you an office as you need it. And for how much? $10 an hour. So if you only need it 1 hour a day, that's great. And so everything changed. And so it's one more time I've been shown that so often God puts the solution in motion before I even know I have a problem. And they were working on that building 2 years ago, and here I am just having the stroke a few months before that. So he's in charge, and he knows what he's doing. He's got a plan. I don't always see it, but I have to be patient enough to wait for it. And then one other thing that was a interesting thing that we went out to dinner Friday night at a real nice place out there at the harbor. And during the dinner, I had a text from my wife. And the text is, I just had a flat on the 57 freeway, but she said everything's okay, and now I'm out to dinner with a cute blonde guy, and that's my 12-year-old son. And so I knew who she, what was going on. So I'm typing back to her a nice, cute answer that, yeah, well, watch out. I know this guy. I know his type. He's going to end up in bed with you tonight. And so in the meantime, I get another message. So when I look at the second message, as I send mine and I look at it, and the order of the messages is she's describing the guy that changed the tire. And so that is... And I said, holy shit. And so I said, you know, I said, I think we had the order of the messages got jumbled here. We're going to have to take a second look at that. She said, God, you straightened it out because I was really pissed. So anyway, I still have a home to go home to. Thanks.
Well, my name's Lee, 1E Lee, and what have I gained from this retreat other than, just a couple of days of peace and tranquility? It's interesting. This is my second one here. I was here last year, and there, as Daryl said, there's things that are said that I need to either hear for the first time or hear it and remember what I've heard before. And it puts it in context where I gain a little bit better understanding and what this condition that I have, which is compulsive overeating. And I think, I want to thank Rex and Jim for stepping up and doing this for us. We're all in this together, and I appreciate your leadership here. Hearing the definition of abstinence as a spiritual condition kind of put it in perspective for me, because I've always had this... this question, as far as what is it about food, that separates me from the other man, and I've had trouble with alcohol as a young guy. Some of my worst episodes in life, I happen to be under the influence of alcohol when they happen. So I know that I have an alcoholic mind, but yet I'm not the typical alcoholic. And I've gone to AA meetings and I identified myself as an alcoholic, but I've always felt as though, that's not really what I am. I'm a compulsive overeater. But there's a lot of overlap. There's some similarities there. And so I've listened to the debate over all these years about what abstinence is, and it seems as though everybody has their own definition. But for me, the concept of a spiritual condition really kind of nails it, because it applies with almost everything that I do. My handwriting has been fairly awful most of my life, as my sons are. I mean, my wife attributes that to the male Spencer gene. But I notice that when I'm in a certain frame of mind, which I refer to as a spiritual condition now, my handwriting is almost perfect. It's interesting. I have the skill set to be able to do that, but it's my mental condition and how I'm feeling about life will determine whether I'm really in a hurry and scribbling along, or I'm taking time and doing it right. It's the same way with my artwork. And if I apply that to the compulsive eating part, the part where I have trouble is when I get into the non-spiritual condition. When I get into the natural man, or me, when I'm in charge of how I'm feeling, my emotional state, then the crazy thoughts come up, and they're just right below the surface. It's interesting coming in this room to just now. You're thinking, I'm going to come up here and pitch. I look at that chair, and my first thought is, my God, they're going to do an intervention for me. And I thought, now come on, Lee, that's probably a little over the top thinking. So let's just get beyond that, and let's get back in your chair and get on with the day. But that's a typical example of me at my best efforts, and if I apply that to my sexual drive, which is a God-given drive, if natural Lee gets in place and starts using his thoughts as far as my relationship with girls, it's really screwed up. And so if I'm in a spiritual condition to where I look at all human beings as God's children, and I want to be of a type of a person in a relationship where I help them feel good about themselves, it's not about what I want, then I can be rational and I can do what I know to be God's will. And so thanks for that definition, Jim, because that really set that in perspective for me. And that applies across the board, all aspects of my life. Food happens to be one of them that fits in that slot. But if I'm in a good fit spiritual condition, which I do believe the steps get us there, then I'm going to be making God's choice for me. What does God want? Well, Okay, if I do that, then I may be able to have a shot at getting it right. Anyway, thanks.
Hello, I'm Vincent. I'm a compulsive overeater. Hey, everybody. And I'm addicted to notes, but I don't eat them later on. And that thought came into my head as I was, you know, jotting down notes as I was listening to y'all today. Yeah, I used to eat paper. I just realized it as that thought came into my head. You know the bottom of the cupcake, you know, that you peel the paper off of? I stopped eating that somewhere in adolescence. And along with that, I remember eating the erasers off pencils, eating the glue in elementary school. And, you know, these thoughts just came into my mind today. As most of you know, I'm really new at this. I've been in OA for 2 months, and I thought I'd immerse myself by coming to a retreat this weekend. I'm a native neurotic New Yorker. Retreat is a word that just did not gel. You know, it was like speaking another language. I never did a retreat in my life. And I was really awestruck to find the sense of peace that I had at some points this weekend, the sense of renewal, and the feeling of my feet on the ground, or, you know, rooted to the ground. I want to thank you all for helping me attain those feelings. You guys have been really warm and courageous and welcoming to me. I appreciate that immeasurably. You taught me a lot of things. And most important, you taught me what to look for and what to look at. You provided me a sponsor and some phone numbers of new friends. I also want to thank the leaders and the organizers. It's much appreciated, and I feel so much more solid now than I did a couple of days ago. Walking in here knowing hardly anything at all about overeating, the disease of overeating, and Overeaters Anonymous. Thanks a lot.
Leonard, compulsive overeater. Well, there was this duck, you see. No, I won't do that. You know, Bill Durth, may he rest in peace. There was so much respect for Bill Durth that he actually got up at a night meeting when we were all tired as hell and wanted to go to bed and hungry, and he told a duck story that went on for 45 minutes. It kept everybody spellbound. And I'm not Bill Durth. He's a great man. This has been a great retreat for me. I really, I found myself at first not wanting to write the letter to God, and I just taken a wonderful walk up the San Ysidro up there, and I was talking to the gardener, and we went over and looked at this magnificent lotus blossom that was flowering, and lotus blossoms, as you know, are very rare and flower only once a year, and they're quite spiritual all over Asia. And we looked at this lotus blossom, we were talking about it, and talking about the beauty of his garden. He was very proud of it, and somebody was willing to talk to him about his garden. I couldn't shut him up. He was so excited, but it was really lovely. It was very beautiful up there, and the gardens are great. So came down here, and I really wasn't ready to write a letter and then sit here for an hour and listen to everybody. I was very restless. I wanted to go out. I wanted to go hike. I wanted to run. But, you know, patience is something that I really struggle with, especially as I'm getting older. And being a good listener is something that I struggle with. And it's good for me to listen. You know, it's the old story of two ears, one mouth. We should be listening twice as much as we're talking. And that's important for me. So this is a good lesson for me to listen. And in writing my letter, I just started writing down the wonderful things of the retreat. I really got a lot out of it. It's my 13th retreat, and certainly it's right up there at the top. And I have to really thank the two retreat leaders who led us with a easy hand on the break. I mean, they were really willing to listen and go with the energy and steer in a gentle way, and I think it made for a great retreat. And I really want to thank both Jim and Rex because they did a lot for me. But let's give them a hand. Gets up some energy. And my eating was really abstinent. I looked at that big bucket of chocolate, that big bucket of vanilla, and that chocolate sauce, and I thought, wouldn't it be great if I ate a big plate of that and then dropped dead right on the spot? That would get everybody abstinent here. That would be fantastic, you know. I'd go, but I'd be of service to my fellow man. I mean it. I really went through my head, and I thought, wow, you know. And I thought, well, my wife would probably miss me, and I better not do that. But it was a thought. Anyway, paramedic would make a mess here, you know, destroy the serenity. But my food was really good, and I slept well, and I had a great roommate, and I was very fortunate. I only had one roommate, so we had a lot of extra room and space and quiet in the room. And it's really a blessing, and it's a blessing to hear all of you, and wish you a great year, and let's all get back here healthier, thinner, more spiritual, and ready to go again. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Mark. I'm a compulsive overeater. And first of all, the leaders, thank you, Rex, for your passion, especially going through the big book and what you talked about with service today. And step 12 is just something that reinforces me and what I always think and say I need to do more of, but applying that and how important it is. And Jim, thank you so much for a lot of tools and insight. And I've been in the program 11 years, and there's things that are coming from him and both guys that I hadn't even heard before, and that I'm really grateful for that. And coming off of this retreat here, I can't say that I'm going to go into my next meal at home and apply everything that I learned right away. You know, how long is it going to take for me to let this sink in? But one thing I know I'm going to do is I wrote a lot of notes. I definitely took several pages today, and I want to go home. I want to find a quiet place, meditate a little bit, go through my notes, see what I can apply at the moment, and just try to grow this thing, because this disease is tough, and I've had some small victories here and there, and I've had some setbacks, but I definitely believe this disease has saved my life, coming in at over 300 pounds back in 2001. I feel renewed. I can't say I had any serenity attacks this weekend. We talked about that in the group yesterday morning, in that sometimes I can be in these moments of beauty and serenity. And I definitely had some moments that were just amazing around this place. And so that I want to take it with me, and I know that more of that is to come. And last thing, I heard a great baseball analogy about abstinence and food plan, and I heard that the food plan is like your catcher with the catcher's mitt, and the abstinence is the backstop. So if the ball gets by, the backstop's there to stop the ball. And I want to apply about God coming first in everything, praying that backstop stay strong and it's well built, and that's going to be the foundation, to pray for God to help me lift this, that that goes to the helping in the food plan, which goes into helping in recovery, which goes to helping to be maintained by service. So it all just starts with God, and I'm so grateful. Great to see a lot of guys here that I've seen in the past retreats, and meet some more new friends and fellowship. So thank you very much. Thanks for that. I'm going to take my time anyway, no matter what it seems like. I'm Steve. I'm a compulsive overeater. One of my first sponsors said to me that, Steve, when you run out of ideas, then the recovery begins. And I kind of liked that. At the time, I didn't understand it, but I was born with a brain, and I have a lot of ideas about stuff, and being in the health professions, I said, oh boy, I really understand all this stuff, and you know what, it's a bunch of bullshit. Most of what I understand, because I'm trying to understand, I'm trying to think, I'm trying to, you know, make sense out of everything, and you just can't understand it. And one of the things I like is I like simple answers and, you know, truisms and stuff. And one of the groups we were in was trying to deal with abstinence and food plan, and I basically said, well, damn it, when people come into the group and the first thing they seem to get confused about, well, I don't understand what about an abstinence is and what a food plan is. And I always simplified it and said, well, abstinence is what you don't eat and food plan is what you do eat. And it seemed to make sense to newcomers. Well, Jim, I don't know what I have to tell you, but something good out of South Bend, I don't know. But your analogy about the spiritual gift of it, like, damn, I like that. I really like that, because it really is a spiritual journey. And more I struggle and more I try to make sense of things, the more it doesn't work. But if the more and more I just kind of let it go and let my higher power kind of move in there, I'm saying, yeah, it's like grace. It's like, you know, it just sits in there. And that abstinence, if I can just let it go. I've experienced within a very short time, about 2.5 years ago, when I sat on a retreat with Harlan, and on an eyeball-to-eyeball basis, I just took a serious step 3, and I was relieved almost immediately of any compulsion of flour and sugar for about 9 months. And I thought, what the hell is that about? And it was really there. And I didn't realize that it could happen, even though I knew mentally up here in the brain, I thought, but here it was really happened. And so, wow, abstinence, wow. Well, it's more than that. It really is. And it comes and goes. And it's like I'm hearing people saying, well, I got to earn it and work at it. You know what? It is a set of grace. It is a spiritual gift. And I've had it come and go. And I need to just keep going at it and working at it as not that I'm going to gain it, but I'm going to basically just do the steps, keep coming to the retreats, do service, and be thankful for every day that I've got. And I appreciate Rex, I appreciate Jim, I appreciate all of you. But just the opportunity to say yes to life and to be here was the weekend, and that's what I'm so grateful for. Thank you.
Dane, compulsive eater. I'm excited and nervous to be standing here like a French poodle. Let me start with a letter I got, an email. There was a guy here last year. We talk about the people that aren't here. DP, that's my name. Great to hear from you. Thank you for thinking of me and sending me an email as you head north to Santa Barbara. I am very happy for you to take this time away with the men and work your program. Yes, please say howdy from Afghanistan. And yes, I stay away from any Afghans with a gun. I am doing great. I have actually lost weight and in much better physical condition. I weighed last month and I was just under 250 pounds. My program consists of a Bible study and prayer every night with my Kenya buddies, 1 hour of prayer each morning by myself, and Harry and I pray for each other 10 minutes each morning. Sunday services by a chaplain that puts body bags on the plane's home on a regular basis. The chaplain is serious about his message each Sunday. I really am homesick and can't wait to get home. No jobs available now. I am hoping the economy will pick up in January or February. I am praying I will be at Casa de Maria next year. The Kenya guy and I will be praying for you and the guys this weekend. God bless you, Paul. Most of you know who that is. But he was here last year. And he was out of work. He just... Anyway, and so he took a job at double his pay to work in Kabul. That's one. I have three things. The in-betweens Jim talked about. One of the in-betweens is on my way back, I have to have lunch somewhere between here and Carpinteria. If anybody wants to have lunch, I'll do that with them. But I have to visit, I set it up so I could visit a relative who's about 80 and lost her husband last year. And I bought a shirt at Ross on the way up. 18 and a half, 36, 37. And I thought, well, let me iron it, you know. So I went to the office and asked for an iron. And the Peggy happened to be there. And I said, you got an iron? And she said, I'll go get one. It'll take me a bit. I said, well, I'm not doing anything. I got all day. So she went and came back about 20 minutes later. She said, I got stopped. People talk to me. I said, and you're surprised. And so then I took the iron back and I thanked her and hope she had a good day. And the in-between was, she said, I forgot how to be discontent. That's two. The third one was retreats. You know, I'm kind of happy to be here, though I wasn't coming until Don told me it wasn't the weekend I thought it was. And I have a roommate, and I have memories of now of my roommates and the roommates I had 4 or 5 years ago when I began coming. And this is three, right? Let me get to the point. I went to the Rancho Alegre retreat in April, and I was the only one that went. I don't know who forgot to call me, but I even went to a planning meeting with Bob Fallacy. So, like, I after driving from Hollywood, from Santa Barbara to the almost to the casino up that road, and sitting there at 8 o'clock at night, dark and alone, I decided to call Bob. Oh, I was supposed to call you. Well, I understand, you know, and I've forgotten how to be discontent and you know, let it go. But I was ready because I knew it was a kind of a cheap retreat. It's only about $100, and it doesn't quite have all the organization or the support, but I was ready with my cleaners, because part of that turned me off the last time I went to Rancho Alegre was the tables. You know, the tables don't get cleaned from Friday to Sunday morning. You're eating on Friday's garbage. You know, it's just it's kind of a mess. You know, it's a do-it-yourself retreat, and overeaters, you know, we do it ourselves. See, so. And the reason I didn't get called is because, you know, we're a little dizzy sometimes, too. It's like a trait I have. So, everybody say, thy will be done. Thank you.
My name is Don. I'm a compulsive overeater. Obviously, I said last night, thanks for all you guys for being here, but the extra effort by both Rex and Jim for doing what they did and providing what they offered. It's my job to pick it up, you know. And so I think what I got out of the retreat, it was a difficult. Yesterday, I was just subject to just all sorts of sadness and depression. It's been really, really, really hard 3 or 4 months for me in a variety of ways. But what I learned from the retreat, I addressed it just a little bit yesterday, is that I, without getting down on myself, you know, I'm a broken person. And, you know, in the appendix, it talks about a change of personality with sufficient force so that I can recover from my problems and to get those problems fixed. But, you know, what I learned is that it's okay to be busted. It's okay to be broken if you think and you know you can be fixed. Then it's okay, you know. My fears will always tell me, I got a real problem, you know. You know, I need tires in the car, and I don't have any money to buy the tires. So I won't have a car ever, you know. I'm going to get hungry at 11:30 at night. What am I going to do? You know, what are my cravings come on back? But if I believe, and the key is for me is at least is belief, that there is a way out, that these things can be resolved, you know, certainly for the moment, you know, and for the, you know, it's okay. I was trying to find something really, really interesting out of the big book, and it was on page 67 in my edition. It says that fear is, this short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion, and this is what I had highlighted with a little marker, it set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. And my God, I look back at my life, you know, and I say, holy crap. Every jam I ever was in, every problem I ever had, was basically, if I reduced it back to the single point, it was from a fear, you know. And, you know, I can do the acronym, you know, false evidence appearing real, face everything and recover. But you know what? If I don't believe there's a way it's going to be fixed, you know, those things don't work, because that's a very intellectual thing. I mean, I think I considered myself for years to be a great student of Alcoholics Anonymous and the Big Book and the AA 12 and 12. Being an A-plus student and believing it is a big, big difference. It requires a leap of faith that it's part of my problem. Didn't want to do it. And then I start looking for other people to do it for me, and that just sets up a whole chain of events that just really, really makes things worse. But, you know, over the last, I guess maybe not quite year, with the sponsor I've had for a year, I'm finding out that, you know, if I really, really, really work the 12 steps, and somehow or another I'm doing it differently this time than ever before, both from the sponsor's point of view and from my willingness to do it, those steps have allowed me to get through some real, real crappy stuff, you know. And, you know, my only hope for me is that when I leave here, because it is, this is a great place, but when I come back down to the real world, you know, it's going to be different, you know, it's going to be different. But my hope is that I just remember, just keep using the steps, keep using the steps. I was talking to Dave the other day, yesterday, you know, been married to the same lady for 40 years, you know. I got married to her because my roommate got married in college, you know, and I knew Ruthie wouldn't say no. And it's sort of a pretty crazy way to have her start a relationship. But I was talking to him about sex stuff, you know. And when I started thinking, well, I'd like to read something from the Big Book that's appropriate, you know. The first thing I turned to was page 70. Because I was talking to Dave and some other people. I said, you know, I just keep looking around at this girl, that girl. I go, ooh, you know. And for, you know, a guy who clinically hasn't had an erection in about 2.5 years, that takes a lot of balls, a lot of guts, you know. But, you know, I opened up page 70, and there the answer was given. That's why this book is just fucking incredible. You know, it says it's the imperious urge, you know. When I have this stuff, when it's troublesome, work with others. Work harder. you know, throw myself into it, you know, and the problem will be solved. You know, as long as I use the steps, as long as what I'm offered by everybody in this room, by Rex and Jim, everybody, I can get better, you know. And over the last month or so, the food issue has been just sort of just frittering away. It's just not there, you know. And that's the miracle, the fellowship. But it requires me to believe really, really hard. Some people call it the universe. I choose the word God. I really have to believe that, you know, God could and would if he were sought. It's my job to do the seeking, you know. God's always there, you know. And when I believe that, you know, it's going to happen, it happens. That's all I need to do is believe. And you guys helped me a lot believing. And that's what I got out of this. So once again, my deepest, deepest heartfelt thanks for everybody who shared and was here and put up with my crying and bawling from yesterday, because I did a lot of that. So anyway, thank you very much, guys. Keep coming back.
My name is Tu E. Lee, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Thank you, guys. Great retreat. Great job. And the only thing I want to say, because I know time's going on here, and is mainly that, you know, every time I come to this retreat, you know, I know that, you know, right at this moment, that the obsession, you know, to compulsively overeat is gone. You know, because we're all sitting here. We all didn't go to Denny's after we had breakfast this morning. You know, so now it becomes, you know, what am I going to do when I head home? When I stop at that restaurant, am I going to, you know, go home? Am I going to maintain portion control? You know, am I going to maintain my abstinence? You know, otherwise, am I going to put the work in that I need to do to be back here next year with one more year of abstinence? You know, that's really the question. You know, remaining abstinent in these places is pretty easy. You know, there's no refrigerator, there's no midnight snacks, you know, the refrigerator doesn't, you know, call you, you know. We don't have all these reasons why it's okay to, you know, it's okay to overeat. So it's really about sloppy program. You know, I told you guys when I came in here, you know, I celebrated my 40th year of sobriety yesterday. And I know that relapse is, you know, it's about sloppy program. You know, that's what it's about. It's about sloppy program. We heard over and over and over and over and over, you know, this weekend, what a good, solid, abstinent program was. And so we each here have a choice to go out and do that. You know, to get up in the morning a little bit earlier and do our prayer and meditation. You know, to turn our day over to God. You know, we have a choice to do portion control. You know, I mean, realistic portion control. And by the way, I was really impressed this time, because, you know, I always kind of keep a judgmental eye on everybody as they fill up their plates. And I'm telling you, in the past, I've seen people walk away from that food thing with a thing like this, and then get up here and tell me they got 20 years abstinence, you know. And I go, yeah, of what? So, you know, reasonable portion control, that's part of it. Because, you know, I can obsess over, you know, too much as well as what it is. You know, and I have to remind myself of that. You know, so the other thing is calling people. You know, we tell the newcomers to call 3 people a day, right? You know, something like that. I heard somebody, you know, call 5, whatever. You know, that reaching out, that contact with, you know, with other people is so important, especially if you're an isolator to start out with. You know, I know in AA we tell people, you know, you call every time you want to drink. I don't ever hear too many people say, you know, in OA, call every time you want to eat. You know, but if you make those calls several times a day, then you've already accomplished it. And of course, the other thing is what everybody said, keeping God involved in your life. So I hope everybody will be back here next year, all with one more year of abstinence, you know. And God bless you and have a great trip back.
Hi, I'm Mike, compulsive overeater. And I love coming to CASA and the retreats. I had to be bludgeoned into coming into the first one and have gained something every time and really look forward to it. And I realize the challenge for me is to practice what I learn here each time when I get home. Part of it being relaxing, taking it easy, enjoying, you know, where I am. And part of it is remembering to be abstinent, to work the steps, do all those things. And because I have situational amnesia, you know, I can just forget about being in the program in a moment. And so I need to be here. I want to thank the leaders and, you know, humility is one of the best things I have learned in program, because I just keep hearing things. And Spencer, it's so good to see you again. And there was a group of us several years ago who were willing to vote to have Spencer become our father after he led us up the mountain. The way he did it is like, okay. So I get to have experiences with our, you know, here that maybe I didn't have growing up in terms of how men relate to each other and how, you know, modeling behavior. And I also took a moment yesterday to go to the meditation chapel and be thankful for having known Irving Goldworm in my life. He was my sponsor. He was my friend. And I was not surprised to hear that he had passed, but I was nevertheless saddened by it. But I am grateful for having known him. So, thank you.
I'm Rob. I'm a compulsive overeater. Again, Thad, I'll echo the thanks for the leaders and for everyone here. I think the one thing I'm really going to take back was the idea of just inviting God into everything. I mean, inviting him into my food, but also into all of my problems. Rex, I want to thank you specifically for your passion, as other people said, about the steps. One part specifically this, on step 9, this last step 5. When I made my 9-step amends, I pretty much decided what I owed somebody. You know, either, it was either financially or what I needed to do. And I may need to go back and look at some of those to see, maybe I do need to ask them what would set it right with you. It was my decision, and that's kind of myself taking over. I also was reminded or realized that when I had my last relapse, I was very confused by it because I had done all the stuff that you all tell me to do, and I was sponsoring two guys, but both these guys had already been through the steps, you know, and so I was really just taking their phone calls. I was listening to their food, and we had a good relationship, but, you know, what I heard over and over this weekend is that the purpose of the steps is for us to lead other people through the steps. You know, it's not just for me to go through them and check it off and I'm done. Once I do that, you know, I'm supposed to lead other men through the steps. And I wasn't really doing that. And that's eventually what I think led to a lot of my getting, breaking back and going back into the food. And I also, Jim, I'm going to take away from you the whole idea of, you know, letting God do the worrying. You know, my job is to do the footwork and let God do the worrying. That really is a good definition of acceptance for me. I happen to believe that I am also a food addict, in addition to being a compulsive overeater. I know that I am powerless over sugar, artificial sweeteners, nuts, and volume. But that's just the first part of step one. Knowing that doesn't solve anything. You know, the doctor's opinion tells me that, you know, I have a disease, that I have a physical allergy to certain things, and that the only, you know, cure for that, the only thing that they recommend is 100% abstinence. I need to stay away from those things. I'm also powerless over volume. I'll just eat and eat and eat and eat. And that's why I carry that little scale with me. And I'm so grateful for that scale. I look at it not as a physical tool, but as a spiritual tool. It's something that God has given to me to help me to control that aspect of my compulsive overeating. The other thing I'll really take home with me is the idea that abstinence is received and not achieved. It's not something that I've done or will do, and that it's also a spiritual condition. It's not just the act of refraining from compulsive overeating. I love what you said, that God gives us the power to stop compulsive overeating. I know an incredible amount about compulsive overeating and nutrition and food addiction and blah, 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 blah. But knowing all that, have I ever been able to put it into practice for myself more than for about 10 to 15 minutes? And I don't think I have. You know, when I've had sustained abstinence and sustained recovery, it has just been the grace of God that has done that. And so I'm hoping to be able to continue to let God into my life each day and to continue to journey down this road of recovery with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you.